4:50, showtime. Folks, welcome to this presentation, which is Outsourcing Email to the Cloud, just to make sure everybody's in the right spot. I'm impressed that there's that many of you that have showed up at 4:50 in a party town like Philly this late to watch this. So that means something to me personally. I'll take that with me. My name is Gordon Johnson. I'm Director of Administrative Systems at Western Kentucky University. To my right is the vivacious and lovely Pat Johnson. She is a Group Programming Manager at Western Kentucky University in the IT area. She is related to me, although I'm sure by the time this is over, she will not want to be related to me. But anyway, a few housekeeping things. You know, remember to fill out the evaluations. Put the mobile devices on silent. And I would prefer if you hold all your questions till the end because we have an online audience and we'll just get into the whole question and answer situation at the end. So anyway, let's go on. This presentation is PG-13. Now here's why I'm saying that. There's some PG-13 stuff in this presentation. If you don't go to PG-13 movies, you can leave now if it's going to bother you. But that's a hook to keep you here, in case you. So let's set up the conversation. This is about how Western Kentucky University, moves student and alumni email to the cloud. What is the cloud? What's unique about the cloud? Who should care about the cloud? I'm not really going to answer what is the cloud. I'm sure that would make everybody roll their eyes. For our purposes, you know, the cloud is, in my case, I'm the director of admin systems. I've got the data center. I've got the programming area. I've got the sysadministration area. All the resources that it takes to sort of support email is sort of under me. So the cloud to me is somebody else is doing that for me. And that's pretty much how I thought about the cloud in this particular instance. Of course, the other thing about this cloud situation, which is unique in terms of cloud computing, is when it comes to student email, there's this situation going on out there now where it can be free. You can basically push this stuff out to the cloud, and it doesn't cost you anything from an infrastructure standpoint. So who should care about the cloud? Everybody these days has got to care about the cloud. I mean, anybody who's looking at their IT resources and costs and benefits and trying to justify spending money on local premise operations versus going to the cloud, you need to understand cloud computing and what it can offer and the pros and cons of it. So that's pretty self-explanatory. So I'm going to go through our story, basically. Who we are, why we moved to the cloud, how we did it, cost benefits, was it a good move? Just to set it up, you know, we are again at Western Kentucky University. We're located in Bowling Green, Kentucky. We're halfway between Louisville and Nashville. We're a regional university, four-year public, 21,000 enrollment. Right now we have 50,000 email accounts. When we went to the cloud, we had 42,000. We have about 3,500 faculty and staff email accounts, and we're pretty much a central IT operation. So we don't have our operations not spread all over the place like it is at some universities. We have a pretty centralized operation. Also, just some more background on the way we were before we went to the cloud. We had a bunch of email servers, a bunch of storage, a bunch of network traffic. We had a wall of spam and virus filters. We had 3 million messages a day coming into our spam filters. We had licensing costs for emails, spam filter and virus filter costs. Our email client was fairly antiquated. We only gave students 50 mega storage. And we didn't have any integrated calendar or voicemail or messaging. So, you know, we had a lot of sort of things about our situation that made us, made going to the cloud somewhat, it appealed to us. Why go to the cloud? Everybody's doing it. It's free to some degree. It's better than what you've got. How can you not do it? I mean, these are the questions we were asking ourselves. We've actually been asking these questions for several years now because we see other people doing it. We got a new VP the last 2 years, Dr. Bob Owen. He's in the crowd. Bob's a very progressive thinker. And so this is what Bob said. He walks in the door. He says, "What are you guys doing with email?" I told him, he said, "You need to move it. It's your responsibility, so go do it." So basically, I took it on at a pretty, you know, intense level, trying to see what alternatives were out there for moving mail. So this is things we were worried about traditionally: loss of control, security, privacy, confidentiality. There was a lot of talk about whether the free email was ad supported, legal e-discovery and archiving issues. You know, we have a lot of those issues at our university, and of course performance and reliability were other things we were worried about. So when I took over our premise email about 5 years ago, it came under my area, and it was not performing well when I took it over. I spent a lot of time beefing up our servers, optimizing the setup. You know, these days some people say email's not the most important form of communication. Well, I guess it's not. Students would rather be texted, but officially it's our main source of communication. So having student email work correctly for all sorts of reasons was a fairly big deal with us. And it's also a stressful point, too, because I'd say I have more stress over email systems staying up than about any other system, even though, you know, I'm in charge of all the main ERP systems, too, because if email goes down, that's one of the main systems the president uses. So it's always been something that's been kind of a stressful system to keep up. And when we talk about moving it to somewhere that we feel like we might have less control of it, that always creates concerns. But I also knew that it was a lot of work to keep it going the way we had it going. So this was just too good not to investigate. Basically, if you want to know how to go to the cloud, you can just, I'll send you this slide and you can just follow it. That's all you need to know. Dr. Owen, he appointed a committee of which I chaired. We looked at the options. Guess what the options were? Live and Google. We didn't really look at anything else. We delivered a recommendation to the VP. He said, "Good, go do it." We marketed the idea, got buy-in. Implementation committee, project plan, follow the plan. We went live, and we dealt with the issues. That all there was to it? The devil was in the details. And this is actually sort of one of the takeaways from this presentation. You know, we talked to other schools. We did our due diligence. We thought we knew what we were getting into, and to a large degree we did. But when you actually go to do something like this, and we did it in a fairly tight time frame. We basically did it in about a 4-month period. And we did it all or nothing. We had so many years of built-in programming and scripting and identity management integration and that we had to basically sort of redo. And it was a lot more work than you just, even if you write it down, it's more work than when you actually go to do it than it looks like it is on paper. So a lot of the surprise, if there was a surprise with this, was just how much stuff you have in place that you have to rethink when you go to do something like this. We had a lot of implementation decisions that we labored over. One was, do we change the domain? I really mean the subdomain. Our domain is at wku.edu. We moved the students and the alumni. And by the way, we only moved students and alumni. We kept faculty and staff on premise exchange. We moved them to something called Topper. WKU.edu. We're the Hilltoppers, and so we created another subdomain out there, and so all student and alumni accounts, when they move to MS Live, and you can tell by now we picked Live over Google, and we did that mainly because we're an Exchange premise shop, and so we knew Exchange already, and there was no overriding reason. Live and Google are both good platforms. We just picked MS Live because we thought it would integrate better with our existing exchange system. But anyway, we decided after a lot of thought to actually use a different subdomain. I would say that, and you'll see, that was probably sort of one of the more disruptive decisions we made, but we had a lot of positive reasons for doing it. We had to make all kinds of decisions, like do we move old mail? How long do we forward from the old account? You know, to what degree when we come up do we have all these other things in place, like identity management integration and listserv integration and all those sorts of things. So there was lots of planning and lots of research that went into the whole process before we actually cut over. And there was also a large marketing campaign to try to inform the students and the alumni what we were going to do. The alumni, see, the other thing that I'm kind of leaving out here is we give students email for life, and we'd always done that. And so, obviously, we're building up accounts as time goes on. We're just adding accounts. So that's another reason we were interested in going to live. Of course, that's fairly disruptive to the alumni because we actually changed their email address, too. So we had some PR issues with the Alumni Association. We had some PR issues with the students, and you know, we just tried to put a positive spin on it, and we did. So, again, one of the takeaways from this was, you know, there's plenty of project plans out there. I'll give you our project plan. You know, it's got lots of steps. I mean, we were successful, but, you know, looking at your individual situation and all the things you have in place and what you've got to think about to do this is really the hidden kicker in this. You really sort of have to plan it and research it to make sure it goes off successfully. So how did it go? Well, on January 2nd of this year, 2011, we went live. We did an all or nothing approach. I know a lot of schools did a phased approach. A lot of schools would drag this out and take a year or more to do it. We created 42,000 accounts and basically made those the live accounts. All of our identity management systems and ERP systems would have the new address, and we changed the domain, we forwarded mail, and we did not move old mail. We let users move it if they wanted to. That turned out to be not a big deal. We thought it would be a big deal, but it wasn't. We had tons of scripting behind the scenes where we had to populate our ERP and ID management systems. Provisioning and deprovisioning accounts was, we wrote scripts to do all that. So we did all the work to get the thing working all in one shot. And we provided a lot of feedback channels so we kind of know how it was going. So I gotta set this up a little bit. So again, I'm in charge of this. And I take emails seriously. And Dr. Owen, the VP, said, this is your baby, just go make it work. So I marshaled all the resources. I had my area, administrative systems, academic technology was doing some training videos. The help desk was beefing up to support this to the degree they needed to. I had communication campaigns going all over campus. And for instance, I mean, here's an email I sent out right before we went live. Just hold on a second while this is key to my whole point here. I sent out these informational type emails to students telling them, you know, what's coming, how to do everything, and this was basically my welcome email to Toppermere, we call it, okay? So I sent that out right before we went live, and I checked with all my folks, you know, we did this over a weekend, and we provisioned all the accounts, and so we're coming in right after the first year after being on Christmas break and having cut all these email accounts over to Live at EDU. And so I come into my office on Monday morning, and I'm looking at my email. And the first email I see, this is the first email. I've edited this email, by the way. This is the PG-13 part of this. This is a female student. This was the first email in my box. So right when I was reading this email, I'm thinking, whoa. And Bob Owen, my VP, calls me on the phone and says, hey, how's it going? And I said, I think they like it. That's a true story. Then I sent Bob the email, and we had some further discussions. But anyway, honestly, it went way up from that. I mean, that was the worst.
That was the worst.
It went to the bottom first, and then it went up. I never got another email that bad, and I did get a lot of positive emails. I mean, overall, it was, it turned out okay. But I'll just go over the benefits here quickly. We did eliminate the hard costs, the servers, the storage, the bandwidth, the licensing. We did reduce our staff resources to support it. We have less sysadmin time, less help desk time supporting this than we used to. Reduced email programming and maintenance complexity. Now, this is hard to describe because I'm going to let Pat talk about this, but we had a ton of provisioning and deprovisioning programming around our email system. I'll let her just talk about it in a minute.
Well, the way we create the email hasn't changed significantly. We do that upon the student's registration, and it's a pretty simple process. We do a first name, last name, three-digit random number. We create a table of, comprehensive table of all those email addresses. Once we know we don't have a duplicate, we load it into our banner system, and we create a CSV file that's ultimately in a specific file format that Microsoft needs and uploads it to the Microsoft site. So that's really very simple. The thing that's helped us tremendously is that we no longer have to purge any email addresses. Prior to this, we were purging every spring and every fall, and we went through a very labor-intensive process, scripting what students were registered, what students had been admitted for a future term, make sure we didn't purge students who still had grades in progress, make sure we didn't purge students who were studying abroad or were in the military or were in the middle of doing a thesis project, on and on and on. So we had a complex programming project to do that, and then we'd send out an email to our students saying, you've got 2 weeks to let us know if this is an error. We're getting ready to purge your email account. Then we'd receive any stray folks that we somehow didn't catch correctly that still needed to be on our email system. And then we finally inactivated them. We didn't even actually purge them until the following semester. So that took a lot of coordination and email, et cetera. And so now we don't do that at all. So we've completely eliminated that part because once these students are on the live email, they stay on it. Yeah, so it's really helped our programming staff. We do, once the email is created, we do send to the student a welcome email regarding their new live email that they get. It's sent to what we call their student other email, the email that they give us when they apply to Western. And it explains to them what they need to do and how they need to access their live email.
Yeah, this may not exactly be clear why this is kind of a big deal, but of course when you're paying for licensing on email like we were before, every account costs you something. So at least in our case it did. So we were constantly trying to keep the number of accounts down to within our licensing. When we went to live doesn't care how many you put up there, and all we care about is that we know who the active student and alumni accounts are. So we keep a master identity management type list of that, and if a student gets an account from us and they drop out of school, we don't purge their account. I mean, it's just not a concern to us. So as long as we know who the live ones are, that's what we care about. It just makes it a lot simpler for us because we had a lot of involved logic that used to try to figure out whether a student might come back and so and so and so and so. So anyway. The other thing that's interesting about this is, we used to have an ongoing problem where, you know, faculty or staff member, they're a student and they're an employee. So, you know, if they leave under anything less than amiable terms, we've got this whole issue with their email account. We basically get rid of employee email accounts when they leave. So with this situation, the way we are doing it now, we give everybody that's a student a Topper Mail account, and they keep their employee account as long as they're an employee. Once they're no longer an employee, they still got their Topper Mail account. So it's there's just not a conflict there like there used to be. I mean, overall, obviously Live at EDU has a lot bigger quotas. It has an integrated calendar. Everybody likes the functionality of it better than our old email situation. So that right there, in terms of our particular situation, was a big plus, and users do like it. So what about the cost? I mean, it took us significant resources to implement it and migrate. Somewhat less control. I mean, this is a problem that I was just talking to a gentleman out in the audience about before this started. We've got enough control. So far, we have enough control. There are a few things that we cannot do when we had email on premise. We can't do them either at all, or we can't do them as quickly. But overall, we can do most things we need to do. We can disable accounts. We can interrogate email if we need to for legal reasons. Things that we can't do as easily, for instance, is we can't go into email logs and interrogate them like we used to. We can interrogate email itself on any account, but the actual logging is something we have to specifically request from Microsoft, and it takes a while to get it. So we can't respond as quickly to instances where we need that sort of thing. It still does require some sysadmin and help desk support. I mean, we do support it, especially from a login and authorization standpoint. We don't support deep functionality on it like we do with our other client. So that didn't completely go away. But overall, from my standpoint so far, and again, we went live with all accounts on January 2011. It's been super positive, especially since, you know, once people just got used to it, it's been a pretty positive for us. So would we do it again? Yes. I would do it again. We have talked about moving faculty staff. That's kind of a whole other issue, moving faculty staff to the cloud. I know some schools have done it. I think we'd have to have a stronger discussion with our legal counsel about moving faculty staff to the cloud, but, you know, it's not out of the realm. That brings me to the point that I left out is, when we were doing this, I did spend quite a bit of time back and forth with Microsoft on their contract. I was trying to get them to agree to certain things in the contract. For the most part, they did. But just so far, we don't have any big issues with anything about the whole situation. So, questions, discussion, let's open up the floor. I guess if I can hear the question, I'll repeat it so you don't have to go to the mic and say it again. How did you handle authentication for Live? What did he ask? Another implementation issue that we went back and forth a lot. We were going to integrate it with our premise Active Directory so that basically, because we have kind of a single sign-on situation with our Active Directory now. We have one thing called a NetID, a user ID that gets you pretty much into anything in our systems. We, in the end, decided to decouple the two and not authenticate through our Active Directory because when the student leaves and goes off right to be alumni and we let them keep that account, or even if they drop out of school, we want to get rid of them out of our Active Directory system. We don't want to keep them in there forever. So we basically decoupled that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we do have a way for students to take their Active Directory ID. They can log into our portal, and they can have single sign-on access into their library account. We did figure out how to do that if they want the SSO-type field. But they basically have a separate ID and password to live.
Yes.
And that's, you know, we just made that decision without knowing whether it was going to actually be right in the end. But so far, I think it's the right decision in our
mm-hmm.
case.
Right.
It actually simplifies things in a way. So.
Yeah.
Other questions?
Are you running the hybrid setup with Exchange in your Office 365 or this setup?
When you say...
Server.
Excuse me?
Is it your local Exchange that's managing the metal both, or are you separate with faculty and staff?
No, it's separate. Yeah, it's separate. He asked whether we were doing the hybrid version where our local premise mail was managing it, and it's not. It's separate, completely separate.
Any federation between your on-premise?
Not yet. We want to do that, but we're not doing it yet. Is that actually working yet? Do you know?
Huh?
So you got the federated access? Because when we did it, it wasn't actually working. They told us it wasn't working anyway. They told us it was coming. Okay, well, that's good to know. In the back. Excuse me?
Do you have an issue, an abuse issue?
Abuse?
Yeah, for an alumni, does that come to you or
to when you, like, give me an example of abuse. Well, if it comes to us and we decide that they're really doing that, we'll just disable their account. Now, someone told me earlier that they heard in another session that vendors like Microsoft and Google can actually have subpoenas and other things given to them without the institution knowing about it. And that, I actually didn't know that. But in our case, if anybody's, so far at least, if anybody's misusing any of our accounts, even if they are in the cloud or if we hear about it, we will disable them. Other questions? Surely there's other questions. Surely this is a probing
over
subject.
There. Over there.
Okay, wait, hold on a second. You just said that you went to the library recently and you're having increased bandwidth issues, and you're saying that because students are accessing live from your premise, from your network,
yeah.
Premise network, and you're seeing higher bandwidth?
Yeah. Like you said you had decreased
bandwidth. Yeah, we had decreased bandwidth because the reason we had decreased bandwidth is because we changed the domain. And so all of the incoming mail is not going through our filters. It's going directly to Microsoft.
But what about the students who are on-site going off to get their mail?
We haven't noticed any increased bandwidth in that at all, really, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm surprised you've seen anything. I mean, the Microsoft client is fairly robust, but I'm surprised you're seeing more bandwidth from that than not. You're saying because you had IMAP connections before. We had that too, so. How big is your school?
Probably about 28,000.
28,000? And how many of your students are on campus?
Probably about 14,000.
Really? Well, we've got we have about 5,000 or 6,000 students actually on campus. A lot more come to campus, but you know, a lot of this access that goes on with email is off campus housing, and so I mean we're not seeing any increase. We're seeing a decrease in bandwidth, a big decrease. That's interesting, though.
In the back.
Question in the back. With separate domains, how are we synchronizing? Excuse me? Yeah, we're populating the address books on both sides. We actually have a way of populating the address book up on Live and the address book on the premise Exchange to where you can search for any student or faculty staff member and find them.
I have two questions from Gary. He's online, and he asks, does Live at EDU provide a development environment to allow you to test with your systems?
I don't know that they provide a development environment. No, they provide some development tools and an API to where you can program against their, well, yes, you can set up a test domain and test all you want. You can set up a, we actually set up a test domain and did quite a bit of testing before we went live. I'm not sure if that's what he's asking, but you can definitely do that.
All right. The second question from him is, how many people were involved from your institution in the implementation of this project?
Okay, everybody can hear that because you said it over the mic. Our implementation committee was probably about 15 people at least, from all the different areas, administrative systems, telecommunications, networking, the help desk, and academic technology. And then out beyond that, we probably had another 10 folks or maybe even 20 folks that were different programming folks that worked on various pieces of it.
Gordon, I also have a request for you to repeat the questions that the audience asked so that the online audience can hear the questions.
Yeah, I tried to do that, and I've screwed up a few times. So.
What did your exchange administrator think of having all of his work outsourced?
He was pissed. What did your exchange email administrator think of having all of his student email outsourced? He didn't like it. He came around after I had a talk with him. No, I'm not kidding. He did not like it. He was mad. I mean, I don't know why he was mad exactly. I don't know if he thought it was going to threaten his job, because he still had premise exchange he's got to fool with. But, and he still has to fool with this to some degree, but he just didn't like the loss of control that I think was one of his main issues. So, but yeah, there was a pushback, and I got more pushback from inside IT than I did anywhere on this. So.
You mentioned different layers originally of antivirus and that kind of stuff. When you moved over to Live, do you still incorporate any external filters, or do you just let the
No, we were worried about that. We heard all these stories about how Microsoft's, well, when we first went with Live, they were talking about how their filters were like Hotmail's filters, and we were concerned that they were going to, you know, we were going to get stuff blacklisted and blah blah blah. It turns out that I believe they've gone to Forefront now. We're just not getting any issues with that. We don't have any students complaining they're not getting mail or they're getting a lot of spam. I just haven't got hardly any negative pushback on that. So
your 3 million messages a day or whatever are never touching the campus.
Well, some of that 3 million was faculty staff, so some of it's still coming in, but the large majority of it is not touching campus. It's going right through Microsoft's filters straight. Okay, she said, did we only implement the mail and not the Office 365 collaboration suite stuff? At the time, of course, 365 was not there yet. But we implemented the mail, the calendar, the SkyDrive. We did not implement some of the stuff in 365, like SharePoint and Office apps and things. I mean, actually, Office apps is there in what we implemented, but it's not the same as in Office 365. So. Other questions?
You showed on the screen there some of the cost reductions. You had like the hard cost reductions. Overall, is the cost cheaper ongoing?
Overall, is the cost cheaper ongoing? Absolutely, because we don't have those hard costs, so they're just gone. So, I mean. Well, no, we had yearly licensing fees for our existing email system that we paid every year. We had yearly spam filtering. We had like a wall of Barracuda filters across top. We don't need, I mean, Barracuda appliances in front of all this. We don't need nearly as many of those as we used to. So we had some, now you're right about the notion that, you know, we beefed up our mail servers initially to handle the load, and you do that maybe 3 to 5 years. I mean, it turns out that we were actually sort of on the backside of about a three to five year cycle, and we were going to have to replace our email servers. So the timing of it worked out for us that we could see all those savings right there when we went to it. Yeah. How is Microsoft to work with? That's the question.
Mike.
What?
Go to the mic.
Can you hear me? I think you can hear me. That's a great question. Well, actually, when we were going through this analysis, you know, we sort of had a go-to person at Google and Microsoft. That trans when we ended up selecting Microsoft, that individual stayed with us to some degree, and then we were passed off to some other folks. I have to say their response was acceptable. I mean, it was not something where we were like cussing them every other day. I mean, it was, they were pretty responsive to questions we had, consulting to some degree with what we were trying to do. The answers we ask a lot of questions as things would come up. There's things we didn't think of. Oh, how the heck are we going to do this? And we'd ask them, and they'd tell us, you know, what other schools were doing. And we didn't always get the answers we wanted, but they were pretty responsive. And they did assign a little team to work with us. So I was impressed by that. You know, all my other dealings with Microsoft have not been positive. It's pretty much, you know, it's like talking to somebody in like a black box or something. So, other questions? Way in the back. You're going to have to say that one again.
Something about logo. Microsoft and not.
Why did we go with Microsoft and not Google? Another great question.
Because of Exchange, maybe.
Well, again, I'm not just saying this. Google and Microsoft were really, they had some real equivalencies in their capabilities. We basically ended up going with Microsoft largely because we already had Exchange for faculty and staff. We were not running the students on Exchange yet. We already knew that platform, and the Live@EDU is pretty much what we knew from a help desk standpoint all the way through. So we thought it would integrate better with what we were doing. That's the main reason we picked them. So the other kind of ancillary things going on around the state of Kentucky is that at the state level, they just converted 700,000 accounts to Microsoft Live. So, you know, there was other impetus that Live was kind of something that was being selected at the state level. But that really wasn't the main reason. We just thought it would integrate good with what we had. Other questions?
Why did you not move faculty and staff over? What was the biggest worry?
I think, you know, it's just simply this. Faculty and staff are politically and for other reasons, well, for not just politically, I mean, we wanted to sort of get our feet wet with the students first. And students are not nearly as, faculty staff, their email is a pretty big deal to them. But students, they got email accounts all over the place, most students. So we basically wanted to see how it went with the students. And the other issue is, and I'm not even sure of all these issues, so I can't flesh them out, but there supposedly is some more legal issues with faculty staff than there is with students. But I can't really discuss that in detail yet because we haven't tried to do it. So we just want to play it safe, basically. Other questions? What time is it?
It's 5:30.
No more questions.
Are you going to plan to move back to Skip at some point, or is that still because of legal or political?
I think what we're going to do is we're going to look at it probably after we've been on this student deal about a year, which will be this January, and we'll just look at it and see what we think about it. We've just talked about it, saying, well, I think the discussion so far has been, hey, this seems to be going pretty good with the students. I wonder if we should do this with faculty staff. That's kind of been the extent of it. So. Other questions?
Over there.
If we move faculty and staff, we keep on the same domain. If we move faculty and staff, I would almost be willing to say right here, we'll keep them on at WKU.edu. We won't move them to Topper. We'll keep that separate. How many folks in here have moved their email? All you people have already moved?
Wow.
What are you coming in here for? It's hilarious. How many are thinking about it? I guess that's the rest of you.
Yeah.
Some of you held your hand up twice. Okay. Well, that's interesting. All right. Well, if you want anything we've got on this, you can email me at those addresses. I'll give you our project plans. I'll give you our analysis that we did between Google and, it's all, it's all open stuff, so anything I can do informationally or share with you, call me, email me. I'm on the web. You can look me up on EDUCAUSE, and all my pertinent information is there. You can contact me if you need to. So feel free. We're willing to
Thank
share.
You.